You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning. Welcome to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, pastor of St. Mary Parish in Evanston. Co-host, back by popular demand, Wayne Magyar is with
Greg
a
Sackwitz.
New
oh,
title.
Right.
You are now the senior vice president.
Yeah, you must have missed the memo. That's been like 6
Capital
months already.
I'll tell you, you are just really on top of things. What does
that
mean?
Just amazing.
Senior vice president for
people
capital
ask me,
planning.
I've worked for the Jesuits, thank God, for 31 years, and people ask me what I do, and I usually say, whatever I'm told. And it's worked. It works every time.
Or how many work in your office?
Right.
Well, about half.
About half. Exactly.
Right. I mean, what is your title? Or what does that mean? You're just development stuff?
As the university has grown, we now have 5 campuses in Chicago. We have one in Rome. So there was a need for coordination of all of those campus development plans. So that's kind of what I do.
But you are such a modest guy. Hey, listen, I hear you're going to the Blackhawk game tonight.
I am. And actually, our illustrious engineer, Brian Hockey Hitman...
Brock
was inquiring as to whether I had an extra ticket. So at any moment during this program, I warn you, if an email comes in, I will let him know, and he'll probably be on his way out, and we'll be without an engineer. So
he'll be
forewarned.
They play. I think they play the Anaheim Ducks tonight. The Hawks are doing very well so far this year. Oh. Yeah, Anaheim Mighty Ducks and Bears.
Didn't even know that.
They're in trouble. But we better get to our topic today. Today, well, first of all, our phone number 312-255-8408. 312-255-8408 on this rather cold day in Chicago. But you think about it, Wayne, we've had so little snow. In fact, there is even talk of having not a white Christmas.
But the Farmer's Almanac said we're going to have one of the worst, heaviest snow winters in 30 years. So,
but it's coming.
Get ready.
It's coming probably January and February. So today during Catholic Community of Faith, we will revisit the topic of the environment for the hour with emphasis on the Church's teaching on safeguarding the environment, including the themes of common responsibility, lifestyles, and a new look at food production. So our guest in studio is Scott McLarty, the newly appointed director of the Archdiocese Office for Peace and Justice. Scott and his team are responsible for making clear the Church's teaching on many issues of social justice, including responsibility for the environment. Scott is very knowledgeable on this subject and will probably tell us a few things about our responsibility for the environment that we haven't already heard about. So, Scott McLarty, welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Welcome aboard. I know that for some years you were on the faculty of St. Ignatius High School with a good friend of mine, Chuck Thompson, and his wife, Amanda, mm-hmm. but Chuck was on the faculty with you. And so how long have you been with the Office for Peace and Justice now,
My
Scott?
Official start date was July 1st this past summer, so I'm almost to 6 months.
And you're still there.
Yes.
Ready for the watch at this point.
I hear you're doing very, very, very well. Well, now, this whole topic of social justice from the angle of Catholic environment and how we have to be stewards of God's creation. Now, that's relatively new talk in the last 20, 30 years. So maybe to let our listeners know, and for our listeners to call in 312-255-8408, Scott, this is a topic that's really close to my heart. I have been an environmentalist, been a bird watcher since I was 10, and so I really have a great love for nature, the environment, and how we are slowly destroying the environment because we just take it for granted. So tell us more about the topic we're going to talk about today.
Well, for myself personally, I've been aware of issues dealing with the environment on the most basic level since I was a little kid, being a Cub Scout and a Boy Scout and going camping. And the simple rule of, you know, when you're not in the concrete desert of a city or a suburb and you're out in nature, you leave it cleaner than it was when you got there. And so, you know, I grew up with this mentality of, you know, once I go out on a hike or go on a camping trip, we would line up and we would walk through and look for any little scrap of paper so that, you know, we were going above and beyond our kind of basic responsibility to not pollute or not to litter or not to leave behind anything that that God didn't create out there. And I think that there's some basic common sense involved in environmental justice that we all know deep down. And the church has really picked up on that and tied it deeply to scriptural roots in the Old Testament, especially in Genesis, and the whole notion of God's creation and our expectation individually and collectively to protect it, to be stewards of it. And that's really the best way of understanding that word that often gets misunderstood in Genesis, dominion. That certainly doesn't mean that we have the ability to do or that we can or ought to do anything we want with the environment.
A big piece of your work, I would imagine, is building awareness and, and reaching the faithful to really develop this sense of respect, this develop this sense of environmental consciousness that leads them to behave and respect God's creation. Tell us how you do that and some of the ways how you do that.
Well, we're just starting to figure that out, really. One of the things that I realized early on in this position is that that the environment was one of those issues that the office hadn't been doing that much on, certainly not enough. And so one of the first things I did was my own kind of research on what was going on in the city, and that's when I discovered Mark Potosnak at DePaul. And
who, by the way, is a parishioner where I'm at St. Mary's in Evanston. That's how I met Mark. Wonderful, wonderful gentleman and his wife, Christy, and their little daughter, Elizabeth. Terrific people.
Oh, yeah.
But then you met Mark, and then he's been a help to you.
Exactly. He's one of only 24 certified Catholic climate ambassadors in the country. And we're very lucky to have him in Chicago.
Now, what is a Catholic climate ambassador?
Well, that's someone who's received specialized training by the Catholic Climate Covenant, which is it's actually centered on the West Coast, I believe somewhere in Washington. And what they're charged with doing upon this training is connecting parishes with issues of environmental justice, with awareness, but also practical forms of action. What can a parish do? What can an individual household do with this issue? And their real aim is to hit the middle. You know, there are people who, no matter what you say, no matter what scientific evidence you're going to provide, they don't want, they're not going to be interested in this topic. They're not going to think, even if they agree that the earth is warming, they're not going to agree that human activity has anything to do with it. And so they're really, but they also don't want to speak to the choir, preach to the choir. So they're going for that broad middle to try to, you know, one or two things here and there for a parish or for a family can go a long way.
Mark gave a talk at St. Mary's about a year ago. He was outstanding. And I think what really hit the people was he was speaking in a way we had never heard before about the need to safeguard the environment, but just, you know, giving terminology in a very kind way, not pointing a finger at anybody, but also doing a lot of consciousness raising.
How long has the Catholic Climate Covenant been around?
I don't think it's that old, actually.
It's rather new. And Mark told me, I just can't remember. I say within, I think within 10 years.
Yeah, when, and his training was relatively recent.
In the last year.
Out there as well, yes. Mm-hmm. So he's new as an ambassador.
Okay. Now, is as you, and it's early on, because as you mentioned, not only are you only on the job 6 months, but this is kind of a new area for the Office of Peace and Justice. Any conjecture as to how where do you start? I mean, is it at the parish level? Is it at the school level? It seems to me there's a lot of energy, especially among young people today. You don't have to preach to them; they kind of get it. But for those of us like Father Greg, who are much older,
pardon me,
it's more difficult in some
Mr.
cases
51.
To get the people who are set in their habits. I mean, you know, we all know our parents, our grandparents, they never talked about this kind of stuff before, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's one starting point. I think we can attack this from a number of different angles. One is find what parishes are already doing. One of the things that the Office for Peace and Justice has done in the past is a Justice Day. Well, with our new program director for justice education, Tom Howard, that's become Justice Month. And basically, the month of April after Easter, each of the six vicariates are going to be sponsoring their own day, Justice Day. And Vicariate 2, their committee has chosen environmental justice. And so they're going to be focusing on that. And then, of course, we have this this gift of the strategic pastoral plan from the Cardinal. And all of these committees, including Vicariate 2's, are expected to explicitly reach out to and include youth and young adult in the planning and implementation and the day itself.
We're going to go to a break here on Catholic Community of Faith and Relevant Radio 950. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Wayne Majors, and our guest is Scott McLarty, the newly appointed director for the Archdiocese Office for Peace and Justice. Stay with us. We'll be back after a break, and do not touch that dial.
Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through. Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, "You know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in?" And she gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, "Is this something you can do?" And I looked at her and said, "You're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now, and I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head."
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298 or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Welcome back, 9:13. Thanks for the warning.
Did we miss our cue again?
Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio.
I pointed right at you.
9:50 a.m. Wayne Majors and Father Greg Sackwitz. Scott McLarty is with us. He is the newly appointed. How long can you use this, the descriptive newly appointed? I think after 6 months, probably you can
Scott's
say.
Been this
I was
this
hoping
veteran,
to use it
right?
for a year.
This,
a year?
This was Scott's
seventh. So you get through one cycle?
Yeah. Right. This is his seventh year.
Director of the, I still, you know, when I was hired at the university, someone said to me the other day, "You know, technically, there's nothing in your file that says the word interim was ever taken off your title." So I've been interim for 32 years. Scott is the director of the Archdiocesan Office for Peace and Justice, and we're talking about not only the good work of his office, but a lot of the environmental issues that are at the forefront now of Catholic social teaching. And Scott, it's you know, we started talking a little bit about some of the initiatives related to awareness, but the other piece of this is action. And I recall that just last week at our place, on my desk came a resolution from the student government to ban bottled water at the university. And it was
now, why is that?
It was the use of the bottles itself, the plastic. They're not biodegradable. It creates an incredible amount of waste. And what's the matter with water from the tap? So it was probably one of the most, and we have a really smart group of students, but one of the most well thought out resolutions that I have ever seen, because they really did a great job researching. Now, of course, young people being young people, especially if they're passionate about something, it ends with, all right, so when are we going to start this?
Of course.
And of course, there's a number of issues that you've got to manage in order to implement something like this. But that's the action piece, or an example of the action piece that I would imagine your office is going to be looking at, monitoring, and trying to get your arms around as this kind of unfolds, right?
Definitely. And that's something that we're trying to do in OPJ, is start with ourselves. You know, so we've changed some of our purchasing practices. We're only buying 100% recycled paper. We're trying to go as paperless as possible. Instead of photocopying, we're scanning. When we do need to buy electrical equipment.
Scott, what's the difference?
Well, a photocopy, you start with a piece of paper and you end with a piece of paper.
Correct.
With a scan, you start with a piece of paper and then it becomes an electronic document. So there's no additional paper involved. So what you can do, if you need to make 100 copies of something, instead of using 100 sheets of paper, you scan it once. You have one sheet of paper, you scan it in, you create a PDF file or a JPEG file, whatever you need, and then you can email that document to however many people need it.
This is the world we live in now. Mm-hmm. And is that they call the computer?
We're just forging headlong.
Well, in education, this is a really big deal. Mark Potosnak yesterday was saying in his talk at Cardinal Meyer Center that he has gone paperless as a teacher, except for one test. And a lot of us at St. Ignatius, before I came on in this position, were doing the same thing. Students turn in, they write their papers on the computer, they email their papers to turn it in, we correct the papers on the computer, we turn it back.
You know, we'll know we really made some progress when the day of the textbook is gone.
And, oh, well,
you know,
there's still,
I mean, the technology is there to do it tomorrow, but, you know, you can imagine the resistance from the publishers to shut down bookstores and shut down, I mean, it's a big money industry.
Well, I think I was talking to Wayne a couple of weeks ago, just the whole newspaper industry, taking in Chicago, the Sun-Times and the Tribune. I know that buyership is way, way down because people go right to their computer, hit the button, and get the news, like right now, the latest sports scores now.
Oh, yeah, why wait until tomorrow morning?
Exactly. Why wait until tomorrow morning? All this electronic.
Do you think that the work you do in this area, you know, looking ahead, is and I think the answer to this question is yes, but I'll ask you, is going to be easier rather than, you know, I would imagine that as the current generation and the generation after that begins to have roles of responsibility and influence on this subject, that they're going to really become the leaders and carry the heavy loads to make sure that we're doing all we possibly can in creative ways that even one office, as good as it may be, is not going to be able to figure out and get their arms around.
Certainly. I think when you look at the big picture, it's going to get easier. When you look at individuals, it's going to get a lot harder before it gets easier because we have habits and we don't like to change our habits. And that's understandable, which is one of the reasons why when we talk about action, we need to bring in the virtue of prudence. So we have to be prudent. Prudent, on the one hand, some people can see that as an excuse to not act, to not change at all. And then others can misuse prudence in the other direction. And, you know, our entire lifestyle, everything has to change, and it needs to change now. But I think what the church is trying to say is that prudent action means looking at individual circumstances, looking at local needs, looking at individual families.
Well, now, Scott, I need to ask you this, and that is, you said during the break, you're 32 years old, and I'm 58. What you're talking about, is this a given with your age group? Because of my generation, and just making the transfer, let's say, from paper to electronic and other things you're talking about, we were not raised with this awareness, and as I mentioned before, the fact that I was bird watching from the age of 10 and into the environment when I was a little boy, it was like I was considered so rare in that area. Nobody was talking about the environment back in the late 50s, early 60s. It started happening a little bit later on. But is it your generation and the younger that really are proponents of this? So as we get older and your group is starting to really be the ones in charge, this shift will happen?
I think so. I mean, I think there are men and women of every generation who are supportive of the type of action that needs to take place. But I think the younger you get, the higher density you get of people who are committed to this. I mean, I grew up with hearing a lot about reduce, reuse, and recycle, and a lot about litter and local air pollution. I grew up in Southern California, so local air pollution was a big deal. And reduce, reuse, and recycle is still very important, but that's been put now in the context of global warming, which I didn't hear growing up. That's, you know, much more recent. And it's really seeing the local component in the context of the global component that's become really necessary. And that's becoming married in the younger generation.
We're going to go to a break here, but we want to remind our listeners to stay tuned, because a bit later in the program, we will be talking with a teacher at one of our Catholic high schools who is teaching future generations how to live better and protect the environment in a better way. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Wayne Majars, and our guest is Scott McLarty. We're talking about the environment. Our phone number, 312-255-8408. We'll be back right after a break.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Help unwrap the holiday spirit this season with Catholic Charities' annual Celebration of Giving. Catholic Charities invites you to help children and their families experience the joy and magic of the holiday spirit. Sponsor a family, donate a toy, or volunteer with us during the season. For more details, visit www.catholiccharities.net/celebration or call our hotline at 312-226-0650. That's 312-226-0650.
Welcome back. 9:22 on a Friday morning in Chicago. Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Scott McLarty is our guest. He is the director of the Archdiocesan Office for Peace and Justice. And Scott, just before
I'm
the
no
break,
longer the newly appointed.
No longer newly director. Appointed. Once you get past the 20-minute mark on the program,
you're a veteran.
Experienced, and then. And once in a while, we have a guest that by the end of the show, they're former, but we suspect that won't be the case today.
I hope not.
local versus global. You know, when we. Growing up in a city like Chicago, there's so many dimensions to this issue of environmental consciousness and sustainability, and we all see it in the places we work. We see opportunities to kind of slowly chip away at the issue. But what one of the reasons why your office exists, and this is an important part of the agenda, is to really raise the global consciousness of this and link it to our Catholic social teaching, much of which really started during the pontificate of Pope John Paul II. So tell us how you start thinking about that issue and that dimension of this subject.
Well, I think one of the things to keep in mind that the Catholic perspective on these things is always going to be both and. We can't separate the local from the global or the other way around. We have to be thinking about the whole picture, which makes things, on the one hand, very difficult and very complex. But what we end up doing as a result of that is going to be more influential and more effective in changing things. And so one of the things, there are all kinds of ways to respond to globalization, what that word means. But more than anything else, I think what we know from globalization is that what we do on the local level, even on the local level of neighborhoods, has an effect on what's happening across the globe. And we have to, on the one hand, know how we can be affected by that. But that also means that we have enormous global power and influence then on the local level. And we can use that in the right way to enact the right change.
Now, Scott, along those lines, you know, people have said to me, what difference can I make? And that would be more on the local level. And even they get more overwhelmed, what difference can I make on a global level? Mm-hmm. And so the response is, I'm just one person, makes no difference. Respond to that.
How do you spend your money? What do you buy? What do you eat? Vote with your fork. Vote with your pocketbook. Because the world is so interconnected today, when you buy any packaged good, you know, you're buying something most likely that has a global component. It was built in one country. The raw materials come from multiple countries. The packaging came from another country. They all come together in one point. They get put on a boat that goes to one of our coasts. And then the vast majority of those containers actually come to the Chicago area, to the CenterPoint Intermodal Facility just in Will County. And then it goes to the rest of the country from there. So how you purchase your Christmas gifts makes a global difference.
One of the dimensions in John Paul II's doctrine on safeguarding the environment talks about this idea of common responsibility, and we touched a little bit about raising awareness and doing that across various demographics with various backgrounds in various countries, both locally here and also across the world. But there's an interesting dimension actually in this doctrine that I've always thought about, and that is this concept of the collective good. And the ability or the challenge actually that we have to recognize that what we do individually has a bigger, broader collective good that not only resonates within our local communities, within our state, within our country, but globally. That seems to be a very difficult nut to crack in all of this, because not only of the many dimensions that you mentioned, but because we're pretty myopic as a society, and we care about what we do, we care about what we care about how we behave. I recall in a recent newspaper article, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, where a senior citizen was confronted with this idea of sustainability and, you know, what are you doing? And her response was, you know, when I was growing up, we had milk delivered in bottles to the house, so there was no plastic. We didn't have anything such as bottled water before. So she almost said, well, you know, I didn't create this problem. Somebody who came after me did. How do you respond?
Now, to something like that? We're going to put Scott on hold for that response because we're getting from our engineer. We have to go to a break at 9:28. And this is Catholic Community of Faith. So
see, it was such a
good question. It was a beautiful question, but we're going to respond to that, radius. Scott, after the break. Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Wayne Majars, and our guest is Scott McLarty, the newly appointed director of the Office for Peace and Justice. Our phone number, 312-255-8408 on this Friday morning in Chicago at 9:28. We'll be back after this break.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 a.m. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950. The time is exactly 9:30 on this Friday morning in Chicago. I'm Father Greg Sackowitz along with Wayne Madgers, and our guest is Scott McLarty. Before the break, Scott, Wayne had asked a question, and your response?
My response is that when that woman was growing up with the glass bottles of milk being delivered, we had a local food system in this country. And since then, it's become a globalized industrial factory food system. That means that the vast majority of what we eat and what we put on our tables flies thousands of miles. You know, she did not get asparagus from Chile in February because that just didn't happen. But now we can get asparagus all year round. We can get strawberries all year round. And the carbon footprint of flying all of that food around is just enormous.
On that wonderful note, we go to our new guest, Dave Madden, a science teacher at St. Ignatius College Prep in Chicago, joins us by phone to talk about the work that he is doing with his students. We understand, Dave, that you only have about 15 minutes during this break before you go back to class. Madden, welcome to Catholic Community of Faith.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I think just with what Scott was talking about, it fits in exactly with what you are trying to do in the work at St. Ignatius. And Scott, you coined it.
Aquaponics?
I have never heard of that. Have you, Wayne?
Yes. I was telling Scott before the program, we're actually building an aquaponics lab as part of our new Center for Environmental Sustainability and new residence hall. But tell us what you're doing with your students at Ignatius.
So we're combining it kind of with some of the kids that I teach in a sophomore integrated science class, and then the juniors and seniors taking AP biology. So it's partly in class and partly as a aquaponics club, where really we want to have kids experiencing some kind of growing, some kind of stewardship here in the classroom. We've got in the biology lab, you know, a big old tank, and we've had it, you know, in various stages. Right now it's actually shut down because we had to retweak some of the autosiphons, but we have plants growing on the side. We have probably around six or seven different types, mostly greens and herbs. Those will be transferred into our aquaponic system, which is a combination of aquaculture to grow and raise fish and hydroponics, which is to grow plants in a soilless medium. So we've got some hydrogen in there. We've got an 80-gallon tank. Soon enough, probably after Christmas break, once it's fully automated, we're going to be growing probably around 20 tilapia fish in the tank and, you know, able to harvest probably around 10 or 12 salads worth of greens per week.
Now, I would imagine the students at St. Ignatius High School, not being too far removed from a typical undergraduate at Loyola, that the students are pretty jazzed up about this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they started getting interested. You know, we've worked with two groups, mainly Sweetwater Organics up in Milwaukee and a little bit with Growing Power up in Milwaukee. And then we had some Ignatian Values Days here on hunger, food, and water issues. And so, yeah, the kids are really interested. They see that the issues are, you know, close to heart, certainly to Catholic and Jesuit education.
Say some more about that, because that is something that I know we struggle with at our place, and we were talking about earlier on the program. It's not that difficult, especially with the current generation, to get students engaged in both mentally and emotionally. Into issues related to the environment and sustainability, but I think the challenge on the for Catholic educators is adding that additional dimension of how it impacts your faith, how it impacts your spirituality, and how it is hand in glove really with Catholic social teaching. How do you do that?
You know, we do it a little bit with working with other teachers. So I'm a science teacher. You know, some of the other teachers that are involved are English teachers and religion teachers. We approached it, again, initially, or kind of the big push was with our Ignatian Values Days, where we looked at different values and specifically committed to doing social justice and being loving and religious, and looking at really three different areas, kind of the eater, the eaten, and the earth, and those relationships, so relation to our body, relationship to the body of the earth, and really a community setting. So here in Chicago, I think some things that Scott was probably talking about earlier, food inequality, differences in food availabilities based on different geographical regions, you know, and then looking to Scripture, looking to the Gospel, looking to some saints, and then even, you know, current or recent time, you know, soon to be saints.
You know, Dave, all that you're doing and sounds marvelous is what I call in a controlled environment, in the classroom, in the school. But how do you translate that once they leave the classroom into the outside world? So when you have this environment in the classroom, mm-hmm. and you're doing A, B, and C, it's controlled, you're in charge. But how do you get the mentality of a young person to take what they've learned and now bring that into the outside world as a way of life?
Right, so that's definitely a challenge. And that's what I was saying earlier with there being kind of two components, a classroom piece and then a club piece. And so the classroom piece is, you know, for the most part, teacher to student or cooperatively learned with students. For the club, it's kid-driven. And I take a back seat and the other adults take a back seat. And we encourage the kids to get out and learn on their own. We do some service trips in and around Chicago, working with some other schools and other kids. We're looking to get to be a bigger part of a group. It's called the Mycelia Project, working with some friends at nearby Whitney Young, again with some folks up in Wisconsin, to where the kids take ownership. Some of the kids are running some window farms at home, which would be kind of a mini hydroponic system. Other kids have picked up some work in their own parishes, to where they're looking at not just a parish increase in farming, possibly hydroponically. Some kids are looking towards aquaponics at home. There's probably three or four of them and another teacher who are filling around with building some of these systems on their own at home and, you know, constantly talking with neighbors involving older and younger siblings.
Scott,
so
jump in.
Dave, it sounds like what you're talking about is on a very local and very small level initially, the development of local food systems, or at least systems in homes or neighborhoods or parishes that can supplement, say, what people buy at the grocery store. And one of the things you mentioned earlier is food, the growing food insecurity for any number of reasons, where more and more people are having to go without food. And healthy food is so expensive, right. it's hard to get that. Can you talk a little bit about what you see as the importance of developing local food systems and going from, you know, a little thing that a student's doing at home or in a parish to something a little more robust than that?
Yeah, I think it's about, you know, buy-in to the decisions that they make, you know, whether it's later on in the year voting in actual elections or voting with the dollars or voting with the way that they choose to spend their time and energy. So if we have economic crisis, if we have, you know, differences in socioeconomics. If kids are able to take all these issues along with their own health and have it in their backyard to where they can eat, or come into a classroom at school and grab some food, or work towards possibly having some outdoor gardening or a greenhouse at a school, to where they see my food is coming from the seeds that I planted, yeah, nurtured from either the fish waste and the water, or from the soil outside, from the energy of the sun. When they make that connection, it's much clearer than possibly at a food, yeah, store or bag lunch.
Dave, I'm curious, especially dealing with high school students and what you may hear from their friends or their parents. Do they become ambassadors or maybe even watchdogs for what happens at home to make sure that they're taking the lead in applying what they're learning in your class into the household?
It varies. It's a different and kind of a complex, sometimes confusing situation. I think the kids, they're learning about it. They certainly are experiencing it. But the buy-in is, it varies. You know, they certainly are talking with parents, and I'll hear that at parent-teacher conferences, or if I see some parents at a basketball game, or even siblings at like an open house here at school. So definitely they are doing that. But kids are kids. You know, they'll still come into class with a plastic water bottle or with a bag of chips, you know. So it's not complete, and not that it needs to be either. I think it's small steps where,
sure, yeah.
The kids are introduced to it and they begin a process about thinking. It's a different level of awareness, and I think that's really my overall goal.
We're going to go to the phone now, Dave. Mike from Wheaton, you have a question and comment. Welcome to Catholic Community Faith. Good morning, Mike.
How you doing, Father Greg? It's Mike Weber.
Mike, how are you?
Yeah, very good.
Oh, my Lord.
I've been listening to your show every once in a while when I can catch it. I just wanted to say this has been a great show, and it's always nice to hear some fellow Ignatians on the radio. So, but I was wondering, I do kind of have a question, aquaponics and all this that I've been hearing about, and just, Scott, your work, how do you get involved in something like this? How did you, become, the newly appointed, I don't remember your title, but
peace and justice.
How did you get into all this?
Well, in general, with Catholic social teaching, that's something I've been deeply interested in and studied in both undergrad and graduate school at Loyola. When I first met Wayne over a decade ago, although he doesn't remember me.
I was only 15.
And Wayne mentioned earlier a few minutes ago how, asked whether the kids become watchdogs with their parents. Well, I got to say, probably the most important way I got interested in this specific question about the connection between food production and an environment is Dave was my watchdog. So a number of years ago, Dave started talking to me about all these things, and over about a year got me to finally read Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma. And then, my wife and I kind of started making these lifestyle choices. We adjusted our food budget. We tried to be much more careful about buying real food rather than what Pollan calls food-like substances. They masquerade as food in most aisles of the grocery store. But little things like that progressed to St. Ignatius with Dave's leadership, bringing in a community-supported agriculture where you can you put in money into a local farm and you get weekly boxes of fruits and vegetables, that's a wonderful thing. It's also something we're talking about starting at the Meyer Center as well.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you very much for your phone call. It's been a long time since we have talked, and God bless you, Mike, for a blessed Advent and Christmas, and thank you for calling here on Catholic Community of Faith. Dave, before we wrap up with you at 9:45 here, mm-hmm. I think Scott just started talking about it. Practically, how can we make a difference when you talk about spending in the store or what you're trying to do? How do you translate this into our daily lives?
Oh, large question.
You can do this in 1 minute.
Kind of as Scott said, you know, I'm a big fan of Michael Pollan, and particularly his book, The Omnivore's Dilemma. And partly it's to be concerned and be aware with what we're doing. And going back to earlier, the eater, the eaten, and the earth. So to pay attention to the health of those three pieces. And, you know, maybe in the order of the eater and then the earth and then the eaten. And simple things to do would be to make the food as whole as possible. Certainly there's aspects of food that has more local quality, food that has a more seasonal quality, but at its probably foundation or base is to go after food that is the least processed, that is the closest to the farm, so that has the fewest steps or the fewest different pieces in its process, in its cultivation.
Dave, we've never been accused of making a teacher late for class, so we'll let you go.
Thank you very much. It's exactly
9:45. Thanks for joining us. Dave Madden is a science teacher at the St. Ignatius College Prep and doing a lot of terrific things with his students out there related to the environment, sustainability. And Dave, continued God's blessings on you and your work.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks for joining us
this
morning.
Thank you very much.
Catholic Community of Faith, 9:45. We'll be back.
Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through. Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, you know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in? And she gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, is this something you can do? And I looked at her and says, you're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now. And I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head.
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
During the next half hour, we'll talk to Cardinal George about holiday trees and Christmas trees. We'll take you to a toy parade where Chicago firefighters and paramedics brought hundreds of bicycles to Catholic Charities. And we'll show you why many people think Father Augustus Tolton, the first American diocesan priest of African descent, should be canonized.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You. Compelling television about your Archdiocese.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz along with Wayne Magyar. The time in Chicago is 9:48 on this Friday morning. And our guest is Scott McLarty, the director of the Archdiocese Office for Peace and Justice. Scott, I have to share this story. About 3, 4, 5 years ago, in studio we had Cheryl DeVore, who is a tremendous bird watcher for the state of Illinois, in fact, nationally known, and a huge environmentalist. And she told a story that I've always remembered. She said, you know, remember years ago and even to this day, in a coal mine, you have canaries. If a canary dies, that means there's gases and for the people to get out of that coal mine. And I do know as a fact, you know, bird watching now for 48 years, there's no question there are less warblers, less sparrows, less vireos. You'll always have a great number of pigeons and house sparrows and mourning doves, you know, birds that can really urbanize and get used to concrete. But the little, especially the warblers that are very fragile, there's no question there's less and less. And it's a combination of habitat loss, environment changes. And she said, with the number of species that are going extinct, they are the canaries in the coal mine in the outside world, and we're not listening. And that always really hit me, that when you see fewer warblers, fewer sparrows, fewer tanagers, fewer orioles, that as they go down, and species becoming extinct, not only in this country, but all parts of the world, they are the canaries in the coal mine, and we refuse to listen. Your response?
Well, I think that makes sense. I think the analogy works, and I think that explains why there are some people who are pointing to those canaries and screaming at us to listen. Mm-hmm. Now, it's easy for us to lose the analogy and to say, oh, these are wackos who just have some other interest
or agenda,
political or otherwise. But the fact is that there have been signs that science has been pretty sure about for decades, and it's taking a long time. I mean, one of the programs I supervise is Catholic Relief Services, and CRS, globally, they're in over 100 countries. They're in the most poor and most vulnerable countries on the planet, and they're trying to call attention to these canaries. They already, right now, are dealing with the effects of climate change in these countries because of the ocean levels, because of rapid changes in climate, where you have heavy storms, and then you have very, very dry drought periods, and it produces global warming produces those higher energy storms because you have more energy in the atmosphere in the form of heat. And then you have more natural disasters because you get more mudslides because of that and all kinds of other things.
And here's the thing. So, I'm not trying to get into a discussion or debate about global warming because you have two sides of that. Mm-hmm. People say, yes, global warming. Others said it's been a big hoax. But I think a bigger issue is, what are we doing to prepare our environment and world for future generations? See, that's the key. I will not be around 50 or 60 years from now. In fact, every time I do a baptism, I love baptism, the child cries. They cry. They're just doing what a child does. I sometimes think to myself, this child now being baptized, was it? It's 2010 or 2011, 2012 coming up. What is their world going to be like 30 or 40 years from now? Now, we can say, oh, that's so far off. Baloney. We're going to blink. It'll be 2040.
It's true. I think we need what you're suggesting is that we have to think beyond ourselves as individuals, and we have to think beyond the present moment. And I think that's really, really important with all of these questions. And I think with all social moral questions in general, we have to think beyond ourselves and beyond the present. We have to look to the future. We have to use, Wayne and I being, Ignatian, would say, go to Ignatius and say, what's required here is the use of our imagination in the context of prayer. And imagination not just connects us with Jesus and Ignatian contemplation, but it can connect us with a different type of future and can affect our actions in the present because of that. And then when we really have a robust notion of a common humanity, of the body of Christ, that we're all connected, then we can begin to think rightly about these questions. But if we don't, if we are only thinking about ourselves or our own families and no one else, and if we're only thinking about the here and now, then it's going to be easy to despair.
It's a perfect lead into my question because
you're welcome.
Because as Ignatian, it's real easy to grab onto a word like social justice and say, "Aha, mm-hmm. I stand for that. Therefore, I am Ignatian." But when you force the linkage, which is I don't even want to say force, when you by necessity link it with Jesuit Catholic or Ignatian Catholic or the work you do with the Catholic capital C. Some people get a little nervous and anxious and worried and what are you doing? And but that is an absolutely important and critical piece to the work you do mm-hmm. because it's not only nested in the Archdiocese of Chicago, but it's part and parcel with our Catholic and faith traditions. So tell us that dimension of your work. And not only as it relates to what we've been talking about for the last hour on the environment, but the other aspects of your Office of Peace and Justice.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why people get so nervous about social justice in general, about the environmental questions in particular, is because in our country, these questions are not only highly politicized, but they're highly partisan. And that gets people really nervous. And I think understandably so. And we need to be able to thread the needle here, though. We have to be very political because there are very clear political implications to the gospel. But at the other hand, we cannot be partisan. And not just for tax reasons. You know, this isn't about the IRS man. The fact is that good theology demands that we engage in the political system. We have this principle of participation in Catholic social teaching. We have to participate in our political system, but we have to do so in a way that allows us to separate partisan politics from good theology. But all too often, we're trying to cram our theology into our partisan politics, and that's going to make people very nervous.
You know, Scott, a lot of times, you know, as a pastor, when I'm dealing with an issue in the parish, like any pastor would, I think one of the hardest things for me to do is to separate the issue from people's agendas. And many times, people walk in with an agenda, and they don't even know it. So you have a certain issue, but ends up being their agenda. So how do you help separate the issue from people's agenda?
We need to have a spirituality of social justice that's much more all-encompassing. In other words, we can't engage in social action outside of the bounds of prayer. Nothing in reality is outside of the bounds of divine concern. So why would we think we could engage in politics or engage in questions that have political implications outside of the context of prayer? And so when we're consistently reflecting, when we're doing our Ignatian examen every evening, we become aware of our own motivations for things. We are able to purify our intent. We're able to see more clearly and think more clearly, and therefore use our imagination in such a way in the context of prayer that points us in very prudent directions.
Yeah, and that lens is often missing from the way we look at these things. Going forward, what do you see in 1 minute? What do you see as being your top one or two challenges in your new role here at the Archdiocese?
Oh, well, first is that political situation that we're dealing with. I mean, the fact is that we have a situation in Washington that is highly partisan, where it's very difficult to have civil conversation. That translates in the pews. And I think what we need to remind ourselves of is that we are all Catholics, and we ought not to want to tolerate political divisions within the church. We ought to want to work together and at minimum talk to each other about these questions, because we have we are in one common family, that is God's family, and we're in it by virtue of our baptism.
Scott, we need to bring the program to a close. Give us a web. People can learn more about this whole topic.
Well, our website is www.archchicago.org/peaceandjustice. On there, you can find links to all of our programs, CRS, CCHD, Justice Education, Parish Sharing, Faithful Citizenship. You can find resources for the environment and Catholic social teaching, the Compendium of the Social Doctrine of the Church, this Catholic Climate Covenant that Dr. Mark Potosnak is a part of. You can sign the St. Francis Pledge as an individual, as a family, as a parish.
That gives us a pretty good lead. I want to thank, in a very special way, our guest, Scott McLarty, the the director of the Archdiocese Office for Peace and Justice. Scott, you're doing a marvelous job. God bless you. Keep up the great work. Thank you to co-host Wayne Madjars. Wayne's been great working with you today.
It's been a pleasure being on your show.
on our show. Special thanks to our producer, Diane Dunnigan, for her great work, and to another adequate job by our engineer, Brian Hockey, Hitman Brock. To all, God bless. Have a great weekend. I hope the Bears show up Sunday against Seattle.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day and God bless you.